Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of The Relations of Sidi Kou. I'm your host, Shahrazad, and today we're diving deeper into the captivating tales spun by Sidi Kou for the Chan. As we embark on this journey, prepare to be swept away by the rich tapestry of stories woven by Sidi, each one more intriguing than the last. From daring adventures to tales of love and betrayal, Sidi's narratives transport us to distant lands and immerse us in the lives of fascinating characters. So sit back, relax, and let yourself be carried away by the magic of storytelling as we continue our exploration of the relations of Sidi Kou. When the son of the Chan had proceeded, as formerly, to seize the dead one, then spake he the threatening words, seized upon Sidi, thrust him into the sack, tied the sack fast, ate of the butter cakes, and journeyed forth with his burden. After Sidi had as before asked who should tell the tale, and the son of the Chan had replied by merely shaking his head, Sidi began the following relation. A long, long time ago, there lived in the land of Barshis a wild, high-spirited man who would not allow anyone to be above him. Then spake the Chan of the kingdom to him, full of displeasure, "Away with thee, thou good-for-nothing one, away with thee to some other kingdom." Thus spake he, and the wild man departed forth out of the country. On his journey he arrived about midday at a forest, where he found the body of a horse, which had been somehow killed, and he accordingly cut off its head, fastened it to his girdle, and climbed up a tree. About midnight there assembled a host of Chadkurs, evil spirits, mounted upon horses of bark, wearing likewise caps of bark, and they placed themselves around the tree. Afterwards there assembled together other Chadkurs, mounted upon horses of paper, and having caps of paper on their heads, and they likewise placed themselves around the tree. During the time that those who were assembled were partaking of various choice wines and liquors, the man peeped anxiously down from the tree, and as he was doing so, the horse's head fell down from his belt. The Chadkurs were thereby exceedingly alarmed, so much that they fled hither and thither, uttering fearful cries. On the following morning, the man descended from the tree and said, "This night there was in this spot many choice viands and liquors, and now they are all vanished." And while he was thus speaking, he found a brandy flask, and as he was anxious for something to drink, he immediately applied the flask, which he had found, to his lips, when suddenly there sprang out of it meat and cakes and other delicacies fit for eating. "This flask," cried he, "is of a surety a wishing flask, which will procure him, who has it, everything he desires. I will take the flask with me." And when he had thus spoken, he continued his journey until he met with a man holding a sword in his hand. "Wherefore," cried he, "dost thou carry that sword in thine hand?" And the man answered, "This sword is called Kreischwinger, and when I say to it, 'Kreischwinger, thither goes a man who has taken such a thing from me, follow him and bring it back,' Kreischwinger goes forth, kills the man, and brings my property back again." To this the first replied, "Out of this vessel springeth everything you desire. Let us exchange." So accordingly they made an exchange, and when the man went away with the flask, he who now owned the sword said, "Kreischwinger, go forth now and bring me back my flask." So the sword went forth, smote his former master dead, and brought the golden vessel back again. When he had journeyed a little further, he met a man holding in his hand an iron hammer. "Wherefore," cried he, "dost thou hold this hammer in thy hand?" To this question the other replied, "When I strike the earth 9 times with this hammer, there immediately arises a wall of iron, 9 pillars high." Then said the first, "Let us make an exchange." And when the exchange was made, he cried out, "Kreischwinger, go forth and bring me back my golden vessel." After Kreischwinger had slain the man and brought back the golden vessel, the man journeyed on until he encountered another man, carrying in his bosom a sack made of goatskin, and he asked him, "Wherefore keepest thou that sack?" To this question the other replied, "This sack is a very wonderful thing. When you shake it, it rains heavily. and if you shake it very hard, it rains very heavily. Hereupon, the owner of the flask said, Let us change, and they changed accordingly. And the sword went forth, slew the man, and returned back to its master with the golden vessel. When the man found himself in the possession of all these wonderful things, he said unto himself, The Chan of my country is indeed a cruel man. Nevertheless, I will turn back unto my native land. When he had thus considered, he turned back again and concealed himself in the neighbourhood of the royal palace. About midnight he struck the earth 9 times with his iron hammer, and there arose an iron wall, 9 pillars high. On the following morning the Chan arose and said, During the night I have heard a mighty tock at the back of the palace. Thereupon the wife of the Chan looked out and said, At the back of the palace there stands an iron wall, 9 pillars high. Thus spake she, and the Chan replied, full of anger, The wild, high-spirited man has of a surety erected this iron wall, but we shall see whether he or I will be the conqueror. When he had spoken these words, the Chan commanded all the people to take fuel and bellows and make the iron wall red hot on every side. Thereupon there was an immense fire kindled, and the wonderful man found himself with his mother within the wall of iron. He was himself upon the upper pillars, but his mother was on the 8th. And because the heat first reached the mother, she exclaimed unto her son, The fires which the Chan has commanded the people to kindle will destroy the iron wall, and we shall both die. The son replied, Have no fear, mother, for I can find means to prevent it. When he had spoken these words, he shook the sack of goatskin, and there descended heavy rain and extinguished the fire. After that, he shook the sack still more forcibly, and there arose around them a mighty sea, which carried away both the fuel and the bellows which the people had collected. Thus then, the wonderful gained the mastery over the Chan, exclaimed the son of the Chan. Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words. Sarwala Misdu Jaksang. Thus spake Sidi, and burst from the sack through the air. Thus Sidi's 6th relation treats of the wonderful man who overpowered the Chan. When the son of the Chan had done as formerly, spoken the threatening words, and carried off Sidi, Sidi asked him, as before, to tell a tale. But the son of the Chan shook his head without speaking a word, and Sidi began as follows. In times gone by, there lived in a fair country the father of a family, whose 3 daughters had daily by turns to watch over the calves. Now it once happened, during the time that the eldest sister should have been watching the calves, that she fell asleep, and one of them was lost. When the maiden awoke and missed the calf, she arose and went forth to seek it, and wandered about until she reached a large house with a red door. She went in, and then came to a golden door, next to that to a silver one, and last of all to a brazen door. After she had likewise opened this door, she found, close to the entrance of it, a cage decorated with gold and all manner of costly jewels, and within it, on a perch, there stood a white bird. I have lost a calf, said the maiden, and am come hither to seek it. At these words the bird said, If thou wilt become my wife, I will find the calf for you, but not without. But the maiden said, That may not be. Among men birds are looked upon, but as wild creatures. Therefore I will not become your wife, even though, through refusing, I lose the calf forever. And when she had thus spoken, she returned home again. On the following day, the 2nd sister went forth to tend the calves, and she likewise lost one of them. And it happened unto her, as it had done unto the eldest sister, and she too refused to become the wife of the bird. At last the youngest sister went forth with the calves, and when she missed one, she too wandered on, until she reached the house wherein the bird resided. The bird said unto her likewise, If thou wilt become my wife, I will procure for thee the calf which thou hast lost. Be it according to thy will. Thus spake she, and became the wife of the bird. After some time it happened that a mighty 13 days feast was held at a large pagoda in the neighbourhood, and upon this occasion, a number of persons assembled together, amongst the rest the wife of the bird, and she was the foremost among the women. But among the men the most noticed was an armed man, who rode upon a white horse 3 times round the assemblage, and all who saw him exclaimed, "He is the first." And when the woman returned home again, the white bird demanded of her, "Who were the foremost among the men and the women who were there, assembled together?" Then said the woman, "The foremost among the men was seated upon a white horse, but I knew him not. The foremost of the women was myself." And for 11 days did these things so fall out. But on the 12th day, when the wife of the bird went to the assemblage, she sat herself down near an old woman. "Who," said the old woman, "is the first in the assemblage this day?" To this question, the wife of the bird replied, "Among the men, the rider upon the white horse is beyond all comparison the foremost. Among the women, I myself am so. Would that I were bound unto this man, for my husband is numbered among wild creatures, since he is nothing but a bird." Thus spake she, weeping, and the old woman replied as follows, "Speak ye no more words like unto these. Amongst the assembled women thou art in all things the foremost, but the rider upon the white horse is thine own husband. Tomorrow is the 13th day of the feast. Come not tomorrow unto the feast, but remain at home behind the door until thine husband opens his birdhouse, takes his steed from the stable, and rides to the feast. Take ye then the open birdhouse and burn it, and when thou hast done this, thy husband will remain henceforth and forever in his true form." The wife of the bird, thereupon, did as she had been told, and when the birdhouse was opened and her husband had departed, she took the birdhouse and burnt it upon the hearth. When the sun bowed down towards the west, the bird returned home and said to his wife, "What, art thou already returned?" And she said, "I am already returned." Then said her husband, "Where is my birdhouse?" And the wife replied, "I have burnt it." And he said, "Barama, that is a pretty business. That birdhouse was my soul." And his wife was troubled and said, "What is now to be done?" To these words the bird replied, "There is nothing can be done now, except you seat yourself behind the door, and there by day and night keep clattering a sword. But if the clattering sword ceases, the Chadkurs will carry me away. 7 days and 7 nights must ye thus defend me from the Chadkurs and from the Tangari." At these words the wife took the sword, propped open her eyelids with little sticks, and watched for the space of 6 nights. On the 7th night, her eyelids closed for an instant, but in that instant, the Chadkurs and Tangari suddenly snatched her husband away. Weeping bitterly and despising all nourishment, the distracted wife ran about everywhere, crying unceasingly, "Alas, my bird husband! Alas, my bird husband!" When she had sought for him day and night, without finding him, she heard from the top of a mountain the voice of her husband. Following the sound, she discovered that the voice proceeded from the river. She ran to the river and then discovered her husband with a load of tattered boots upon his back. "Oh, my heart is greatly rejoiced," said the husband, "at seeing thee once more. I am forced to draw water for the Chadkurs and the Tangari, and have worn out all these boots in doing so. If thou wishest to have me once again, build me a new birdhouse and dedicate it to my soul. Then I shall come back again." With these words he vanished into the air, but the woman betook herself home to the house again, made a new birdhouse, and dedicated it to the soul of her husband. At length, the birdman appeared and perched himself on the roof of the house. "Truly, his wife was an excellent wife," exclaimed the son of the Chan. "Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words. Sarwala Misdu Jaksang." Thus spake Sidi, and burst from the sack through the air. When the son of the Chan had, as on all the former occasions, spoken the words of threatening, placed the dead one in the sack, and journeyed forth with him, Ciddi spake this time also as follows. The day is long, and the distant journey will tire us. Do you relate a tale unto me, or I will relate one unto you. But the son of the Chan shook his head without saying a word, and Ciddi began as follows. Many years ago, there lived in the land of Gujasmun a Chan, whose name was Gunishchan. This Chan, however, died, and his son, Chamuk Sakikchi, was elected Chan in his place. Now there lived among the people of that country a painter and a woodcarver, who bore similar names, and were evilly disposed towards each other. Once upon a time the painter Gunga drew nigh unto the Chan, and said unto him, Thy father hath been born into the kingdom of the Tungari, and hath said unto me, Come unto me. Thither I went, and found thy father in great power and splendour, and I have brought for you this letter from him. With these words, the painter delivered unto the Chan a forged letter, the contents of which were as follows. This letter is addressed to my son, Chamuk Sakikchi. When I departed this life, I was born to the kingdom of the Tungari. An abundance of all things reigns in this land. But since I am desirous of erecting a pagoda, and there are no woodcarvers to be found here, do you dispatch unto me Kunga, the woodcarver, the means by which he is to reach this place, he may learn from the painter. After he had perused this letter, the Chan of Gujasmun said, If my father has really been carried into the realms of the Tungari, that would indeed be a good thing. Call hither the woodcarver. The woodcarver was called, and appeared before the Chan. And the Chan said unto him, My father has been carried into the realms of the Tungari. He is desirous of erecting a pagoda, and because there are no woodcarvers there, he is desirous that you should be dispatched unto him. With these words, the Chan displayed the forged letter, and when he had read it, the woodcarver said unto himself, Of a surety, Gunga, the painter, has played me this trick, but I will try if I cannot overreach him. Thus thinking, he inquired of the painter, By what means can I reach the kingdom of the Tungari? To these words, the painter replied, When thou hast prepared all thy tools and implements of trade, then place thyself upon a pile of bundled sticks. And when thou hast sung songs of rejoicing, and set light to the pile of sticks, thus wilt thou be able to reach the kingdom of the Tungari. Thus spake he, and the seventh night from that time was appointed for the carver's setting forth on his journey. When the woodcarver returned home unto his wife, he spake unto her these words, The painter hath conceived wickedness in his mind against me, yet I shall try means to overreach him. Accordingly, he secretly contrived a subterranean passage, which reached from his own house into the middle of his field. Over the aperture in the field, he placed a large stone, covered the stone with earth, and when the seventh night was come, the Chan said, This night let the woodcarver draw nigh unto the Chan, my father. Thereupon, agreeably to the commands of the Chan, every one of the people brought out a handful of the fat of the gunsar, a beast. A huge fire was kindled, and the woodcutter, when he had sung the songs of rejoicing, escaped by the covered way he had made back to his own house. Meanwhile, the painter was greatly rejoiced, and pointed upwards with his finger, and said, There rideth the woodcarver up to heaven. All who had been present too betook themselves home, thinking in their hearts, The woodcarver is dead, and gone up above to the Chan. The woodcarver remained concealed at home a whole month, and allowed no man to set eyes upon him, but washed his head in milk every day, and kept himself always in the shade. After that, he put on a garment of white silk, and wrote a letter in which stood the following words. This letter is addressed to my son, Chamuk Sakikchi, that thou rulest the kingdom in peace. It is very good. Since thy woodcarver has completed his work, it is needful that he should be rewarded according to his deserts. Since, moreover, for the decoration of the pagoda, many coloured paintings are necessary, send unto me the painter, as thou hast already sent this man. The woodcarver then drew nigh unto the Chan with this letter. What? Cried the Chan. "Art thou returned from the kingdom of the Tangari?" The woodcarver handed the letter unto him and said, "I have indeed been in the kingdom of the Tangari, and from it I am returned home again." The Chan was greatly rejoiced when he heard this, and rewarded the woodcarver with costly presents. "Because the painter is now required," said the Chan, "for the painting of the pagoda, let him now be called before me." The painter drew nigh accordingly, and when he saw the woodcarver, fair and in white shining robes, and decorated with gifts, he said unto himself, "Then he is not dead." And the Chan handed over to the painter the forged letter, with the seal thereto, and said, "Thou must go now." And when the seventh night from that time arrived, the people came forward as before with a contribution of the fat of the gunsa, and in the midst of the field a pile of sticks was kindled. The painter seated himself in the midst of the fire with his materials for painting, and a letter and gifts of honour for the Changunishang, and sang songs of rejoicing. And as the fire kept growing more and more intolerable, he lifted up his voice and uttered piercing cries. But the noise of the instruments overpowered his voice, and at length the fire consumed him. "He was properly rewarded," exclaimed the son of the Chan. "Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words, Sarwela Misdu Jakzang." Thus spake Sidi, and burst from the sack through the air. Thus Sidi's eighth relation treats of the painter and the woodcarver, when the son of the Chan was, as formerly, carrying Sidi away in the sack. Sidi inquired of him as before, but the son of the Chan shook his head without speaking a word. So Sidi proceeded as follows. Many, many years ago, there ruled over a certain kingdom a Chan named Gugulukchi. Upon the death of this Chan, his son, who was of great reputation and worth, was elected Chan in his place. One baron, a measure of distance from the residence of the Chan, dwelt a man who had a daughter of wonderful abilities and extraordinary beauty. The son of the Chan was enamoured of this maiden and visited her daily, until, at length, he fell sick of a grievous malady and died, without the maiden being made aware of it. One night, just as the moon was rising, the maiden heard a knocking at the door, and the face of the maiden was gladdened when she beheld the son of the Chan. And the maiden arose and went to meet him, and she led him in and placed alcohol and cakes before him. "Wife," said the son of the Chan, "come with me." The maiden followed, and they kept going further and further until they arrived at the dwelling of the Chan, from which proceeded the sound of cymbals and kettle drums. "Chan, what is this?" she asked. The son of the Chan replied to these inquiries of the maiden, "Do you not know that they are now celebrating the feast of my funeral?" Thus spake he, and the maiden replied, "The feast of thy funeral, has anything then befallen the Chan's son?" And the son of the Chan replied, "He is departed. Thou wilt, however, bear a son unto him, and when the season is come, go into the stable of the elephant, and let him be born there. In the palace there will arise a contention between my mother and her attendants, because of the wonderful stone of the kingdom. The wonderful stone lies under the table of sacrifice. After it has been discovered, do you and my mother reign over this kingdom until such time as my son comes of age." Thus spake he, and vanished into air, but his beloved fell, from very anguish, into a swoon. "Chan, Chan," exclaimed she sorrowfully, when she came to herself again. And because she felt that the time was come, she betook herself to the stable of the elephants, and there gave birth to a son. On the following morning, when the keeper of the elephants entered the stable, he exclaimed, "What, has a woman given birth to a son in the stable of the elephants? This never happened before. This may be an injury to the elephants." At these words, the maiden said, "Go unto the mother of the Chan, and say unto her, arise, something wonderful has taken place." When these words were told unto the mother of the Chan, then she arose and went unto the stable, and the maiden related unto her all that had happened. "Wonderful," said the mother of the Chan, "otherwise the Chan had left no successors. Let us go together into the house." Thus speaking, she took the maiden with her into the house and nursed her and tended her carefully. And because her account of the wonderful stone was found correct, all the rest of her story was believed. So the mother of the Chan and his wife ruled over the kingdom. Henceforth, too, it happened that every month, on the night of the full moon, the deceased Chan appeared to his wife, remained with her until morning dawned, and then vanished into air. And the wife recounted this to his mother, but his mother believed her not, and said, "This is a mere invention. If it were true, my son would, of a surety, show himself likewise unto me. If I am to believe your words, you must take care that mother and son meet one another." When the son of the Chan came on the night of the full moon, his wife said unto him, "It is well that thou come to me on the night of every full moon, but it were yet better if thou came every night." And as she spake thus, with tears in her eyes, the son of the Chan replied, "If thou hadst sufficient spirit to dare its accomplishment, thou mightest do what would bring me every night, but thou art young and cannot do it." "Then," said she, "if thou wilt but come every night, I will do all that is required of me, although I should thereby lose both flesh and bone." Thereupon the son of the Chan spake as follows, "Then betake thyself on the night of the full moon aberrant from this place to the iron old man, and give unto him alcohol. A little further you will come unto two rams. To them you must offer batshimat cakes. A little further on you will perceive a host of men in coats of mail and other armour, and there you must share out meat and cakes. From thence you must proceed to a large black building, stained with blood. The skin of a man floats over it instead of a flag. Two erlikhs, fiends, stand at the entrance, present unto them both offerings of blood. Within the mansion thou wilt discover 9 fearful exorcists, and 9 hearts upon a throne. 'Take me, take me,' will the 8 old hearts exclaim. And the 9th heart will cry out, 'Do not take me.' But leave the old hearts, and take the fresh one, and run home with it without looking round." Much as the maiden was alarmed at the task which she had been enjoined to perform, she set forth on the night of the next full moon, divided the offerings, and entered the house. "Take me not," exclaimed the fresh heart, but the maiden seized the fresh heart and fled with it. The exorcist fled after her and cried out to those who were watching, "Stop the thief of the heart." And the 2 erlikh fiends cried, "We have received offerings of blood." Then each of the armed men cried out, "Stop the thief." But the ram said, "We have received batshimat cakes." Then they called out to the iron old man, "Stop the thief with the heart." But the old man said, "I have received alcohol from her and shall not stop her." Thereupon the maiden journeyed on without fear until she reached home, and she found upon entering the house the Chan's son, attired in festive garments. And the Chan's son drew nigh and threw his arms about the neck of the maiden. "The maiden behaved well indeed," exclaimed the son of the Chan. "Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words. Sawala misdu jaksang." Thus spake Sidi, and burst from the sack through the air. Thus Sidi's 9th relation treats of the stealing of the heart. When Sidi had been captured as before, and was being carried away in the sack, he inquired, as he had always done, as to telling a tale. But the son of the Chan shook his head without speaking a word. Whereupon Sidi began the following relation. Many, many years since, there lived in the kingdom of Olmilsong 2 brothers, and they were both married. Now the elder brother and his wife were stingy and envious, while the younger brother was quite a different disposition. Once upon a time, the elder brother, who had contrived to gather together an abundance of riches, gave a great feast and invited many people to partake of it. When this was known, the younger thought to himself, "Although my elder brother has hitherto not treated me very well, yet he will now, no doubt, since he has invited so many people to his feast, invite also me and my wife." This he certainly expected, but yet he was not invited. Probably, thought he. My brother will summon me tomorrow morning to the brandy drinking, because, however, he was not even invited unto that. He grieved very sore, and said unto himself, This night, when my brother's wife has drunk the brandy, I will go unto the house and steal somewhat. When, however, he had glided into the treasure chamber of his brother, there lay the wife of his brother near her husband. But presently she rose and went into the kitchen and cooked meat and sweet food and went out of the door with it. The concealed one did not venture at this moment to steal anything, but said unto himself, Before I steal anything, I will just see what all this means. So saying, he went forth and followed the woman to a mountain where the dead were customarily laid. On the top, upon a green mound, lay a beautiful ornamental tomb over the body of a dead man. This man had formerly been the lover of the woman. Even when afar off, she called the dead man by name, and when she had come to him, she threw her arms about his neck, and the younger brother was nigh unto her, and saw all that she did. The woman next handed the sweet food which she had prepared to the dead man, and because the teeth of the corpse did not open, she separated them with a pair of brazen pincers and pushed the food into his mouth. Suddenly the pincers bounced back from the teeth of the dead man and snapped off the tip of the woman's nose, while, at the same time, the teeth of the dead man closed together and bit off the end of the woman's tongue. Upon this, the woman took up the dish with the food and went back to her home. The younger brother thereupon followed her home and concealed himself in the treasure chamber, and the wife laid herself down again by her husband. Presently, the man began to move, when the wife immediately cried out, Woe is me! Woe is me! Was there ever such a man? And the man said, What is the matter now? The wife replied, The point of my tongue and the tip of my nose, both these you have bitten off. What can a woman do without these two things? Tomorrow the Chan shall be made acquainted with this conduct. Thus spake she, and the younger brother fled from the treasure chamber without stealing anything. On the following morning, the woman presented herself before the Chan and addressed him, saying, My husband has this night treated me shamefully. Whatsoever punishment may be awarded to him, I myself will see it inflicted. But the husband persisted in asserting, Of all this I know nothing, because the complaint of the wife seemed well founded, and the man could not exculpate himself. The Chan said, Because of his evil deeds, let this man be burnt. When the younger brother heard what had befallen the elder, he went to see him. And after the younger one had related to him all the affair, he betook himself unto the Chan, saying, That the evildoer may be really discovered, let both the woman and her husband be summoned before you. I will clear up the mystery. When they were both present, the younger brother related the wife's visit to the dead man, and because the Chan would not give credence to his story, he said, In the mouth of the dead man you will find the end of the woman's tongue, and the blood-soiled tip of her nose you will find in the pincers of brass. Send thither and see if it be not so. Thus spake he, and people were sent to the place and confirmed all that he had asserted. Upon this the Chan said, Since the matter stands thus, let the woman be placed upon the pile of sticks and consumed with fire. And the woman was placed upon the pile of sticks and consumed with fire. That served her right, said the son of the Chan. Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words. Sarwala, Misdu Jakzang. Thus spake Sidi and burst from the sack through the air. Thus Sidi's tenth relation treats of the man and his wife. When the son of the Chan was carrying off Sidi, as formerly, Sidi related the following tale. And a long while ago, there was in the very center of a certain kingdom an old pagoda, in which stood the image of Choshin Bodhisattva, a Mongolian idol, formed of clay. Near unto this pagoda stood a small house, in which a beautiful maiden resided with her aged parents. But at the mouth of the river, which ran thereby, dwelt a poor man, who maintained himself by selling fruit, which he carried in an ark upon the river. Now it happened once, that as he was returning home, he was benighted in the neighbourhood of the pagoda. He listened at the door of the house in which the two old people dwelt, and heard the old woman say unto her husband, "We are both grown exceedingly old. Could we now but provide for our daughter, it would be well." "That we have lived so long happily together," said the old man, "we are indebted to the talisman of our daughter. Let us, however, offer up sacrifice to Bodhisattva and inquire of him to what condition we shall dedicate our daughter, to the spiritual or to the worldly. Tomorrow, at the earliest dawn, we will therefore lay our offering before the Burshan." "Now know I what to do," said the listener. So in the night time, he betook himself to the pagoda, made an opening in the back of the idol, and concealed himself therein. When on the following morning, the two old people and the daughter drew nigh and made their offering, the father bowed himself to the earth and spake as follows. "Av, deified Bodhisattva, shall this maiden be devoted to a spiritual or worldly life? If she is to be devoted to a worldly life, vouchsafe to point out now or hereafter, in a dream or vision, to whom we shall give her to wife." Then he who was concealed in the image exclaimed, "It is better that thy daughter be devoted to a worldly life. Therefore, give her to wife to the first man who presents himself at thy door in the morning." The old people were greatly rejoiced when they heard these words, and they bowed themselves again and again down to the earth and walked around the idol. On the following morning, the man stepped out of the idol and knocked at the door of the aged couple. The old woman went out, and when she saw that it was a man, she turned back again and said to her husband, "The words of the Burchan are fulfilled. The man has arrived." "Give him entrance," said the old man. The man came in accordingly and was welcomed with food and drink. And when they had told him all that the idol had said, he took the maiden with the talisman to wife. When he was wandering forth and drew nigh unto his dwelling, he thought unto himself, "I have with cunning obtained the daughter of the two old people. Now I will place the maiden in the ark and conceal the ark in the sand." So he concealed the ark and went and said unto the people, "Though I have ever acted properly, still it has never availed me yet. I will therefore now seek to obtain liberal gifts through my prayers." Thus spake he, and after repeating the Dzogchen prayers, part of the Kalmuk ritual, he obtained food and gifts, and said, "Tomorrow I will again wander around, repeat the appointed Dzogchen prayers, and seek food again." In the meanwhile, it happened that the son of the Chan and two of his companions, with bows and arrows in their hands, who were following a tiger, passed by unnoticed and arrived at the sand heap of the maiden Suwarandari. "Let us shoot at that heap," cried they. Thus spake they, and shot accordingly, and lost their arrows in the sand. As they were looking after the arrows, they found the ark, opened it, and drew out the maiden with the talisman. "Who art thou, maiden?" inquired they. "I am the daughter of Lu." The Chan's son said, "Come with me and be my wife." And the maiden said, "I cannot go unless another is placed in the ark instead of me." So they all said, "Let us put in the tiger." And when the tiger was placed in the ark, the Chan's son took away with him the maiden and the talisman with her. In the meanwhile, the beggar ended his prayers. And when he had done so, he thought unto himself, "If I take the talisman, slay the maiden, and sell the talisman, of a surety I shall become rich indeed." Thus thinking, he drew near to the sand heap, drew forth the ark, carried it home with him, and said unto his wife, who he thought was within the ark, "I shall pass this night in repeating the Dzogchen prayers." He threw off his upper garment, and when he had done so, he lifted off the cover of the ark and said, "Maiden, be not alarmed." When he was thus speaking, he beheld the tiger. When some persons went into the chamber on the following morning, they found a tiger with his tusks and claws covered with blood, and the body of the beggar torn into pieces. And the wife of the Chan gave birth to three sons, and lived in the enjoyment of plenty of all things. But the ministers and the people murmured and said, it was not well of the Chan that he drew forth his wife out of the earth. Although the wife of the Chan has given birth to the sons of the Chan, still she is but a low-born creature. Thus spoke they, and the wife of the Chan received little joy from them. I have borne three sons, said she, and yet am in no ways regarded. I will therefore return home to my parents. She left the palace on the night of the full moon and reached the neighbourhood of her parents at noontide. Where there had formerly been nothing to be seen, she saw a multitude of workmen busily employed, and among them a man having authority, who prepared meat and drink for them. Who art thou, maiden? Inquired this man. I come far from hence, replied the wife of the Chan, but my parents formerly resided upon this mountain, and I have come hither to seek them. At these words, the young man said, Thou art then their daughter? And he received for answer, I am their daughter. I am their son, said he. I have been told that I had a sister older than myself. Art thou she? Sit thee down, partake of this meat and this drink, and we will then go together unto our parents. When the wife of the Chan arrived at the summit of the mountain, she found in the place where the old pagoda stood a number of splendid buildings, with golden towers full of bells, and the hut of her parents was changed into a lordly mansion. All this, said her brother, belongs to us, since you took your departure. Our parents lived here in health and peace. In the palace there were horses and mules and costly furniture in abundance. The father and mother were seated on rich pillows of silk and gave their daughter welcome, saying, Thou art still well and happy. That thou hast returned home before we depart from this life is of a surety very good. After various inquiries had been made on both sides, relative to what had transpired during the separation of the parties, the old parents said, Let us make these things known unto the Chan and his ministers. So the Chan and his ministers were loaded with presents, and 3 nights afterwards they were welcomed with meat and drink of the best. But the Chan said, Ye have spoken falsely, the wife of the Chan had no parents. Now the Chan departed with his retinue, and his wife said, I will stop one more night with my parents, and then I will return unto you. On the following morning, the wife of the Chan found herself on a hard bed, without pillows or coverlets. What is this? Exclaimed she. Was I not this night with my father and mother, and did I not retire to sleep on a bed of silk? And when she rose up, she beheld the ruined hut of her parents. Her father and mother were dead, and their bones mouldered. Their heads lay upon a stone. Weeping loudly, she said unto herself, I will now look after the pagoda. But she saw nothing but the ruins of the pagoda and of the birchen. A godly providence, exclaimed she, has resuscitated my parents. Now since the Chan and the ministers will be pacified, I will return home again. On her arrival in the kingdom of her husband, the ministers and the people came forth to meet her and walked around her. This wife of the Chan, cried they, is descended from noble parents, has borne noble sons, and is herself welcome, pleasant, and charming. Thus speaking, they accompanied the wife of the Chan to the palace. Her merits must have been great. Thus spake the son of the Chan. Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words. Sarwala, Misdu Jakzang. Thus spake Sidi, and burst from the sack through the air. Thus Sidi's 11th relation treats of the maiden Suarandari. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. I hope you liked my tale. If you did, please follow me on Sci-Fi Tales to listen to more tales every week. You can also share your thoughts and opinions on our social media. I appreciate your feedback and support. Don't miss the next episode of Sci-Fi Tales, the show where we bring you stories of science fiction and fantasy. Good night, and see you soon.